we are holding on the top line of Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph. We learned yesterday in connection with the Mishnah, where the Mishnah had talked about the case of Gozel Machel, one of somebody had stolen and then gave it to eat to his children, or Vihiniach Lifnehim, or he left it for them as an inheritance. So we said the potter from paying, unless it's davar sheyesh be'achrayus. And in that connection, Rami Bahama, we said that Rami Bahama had said that we can see from our Mishnah, Rishus Yodesh Kirishus Lekeach Domi, that when somebody yarshin something, it's the equivalent of having bought it. Therefore, given that we're talking La'acha Yush, which is how he understands it, given that he understands the Mishnah to be La'acha Yush, so you have Yush as well as you have Shinu Rishus, that's enough to make it that they don't have to pay back. Whereas then Rava explained the Mishnah differently to say that you can't prove from it anything about Rishus Yodesh. So, Rav Adar Ba'ava Masni Lahod Rami Bahama Aha. Rav Adar Ba'ava learned that this statement of Rami Bahama, this that we can deduce that a Yodesh in that sense, like a Lekeach, he learns it in connection with a different case. Not our Mishnah, but rather a Braisa. A Braisa says, Niach Lehen Abiyan Moed Shoribis, if children were left behind, and children doesn't mean necessarily Tanim, we'll talk about Tanim later on, so even in other words, adult children, it doesn't matter. The point is that they're heirs. If their father left them Moed Shoribis, money which he had illegally collected as Ribis, and we're talking about the real honest-to-goodness Ribis, Ribis Daraisa. Yeah. Alpha Fisher Yodin change for Ribis, even though these heirs know that that was money of Ribis, ain't Chayav and Lahasa. We don't obligate them to return it. The person himself, in Bav Metzia, when we learn all the genome of Ribis, we will learn that Ribis Daraisa is Yotze B'dayonim, meaning that Beistin can force the person who received Ribis Daraisa to return it. They can't force him to return Ribis Dirabonim, Avak Ribis. In this case, since it's Ribis Daraisa, so yes, if he himself was still alive, he'd be obligated to return it. Heyosi's not, then they're not obligated to return it. And that's
Ribis is just for the person who did. Isn't it the money itself?
No, but that's the point. Now, he received it as Ribis. As far as the heirs are concerned, it's like any other money. So that's the thing. Tosfos points out, what we have over here is like this. It's true that the person gave it to him voluntarily as Ribis. Nevertheless, it is considered like a gzela in that sense.
For everybody.
Well, for the person himself. Because according to Rami Bahama, again, the same way as Rami Bahama learned on Mishnah yesterday, that it doesn't matter whether the original gzela still exists or not, or whether it was already consumed, once the Yoshin have it, so again, you have Yush and you have Shinu Rishus, that's enough for them to be koneh, and therefore they don't have to return it. Same thing over here. Rav Adar Ba'ava is understanding Rami Bahama to be referring to this braisa and saying that we see from this in the same way, even though the person himself, the lender who took Ribis, would have been obligated to return it on account of its gzela, the children are not obligated to return it, even if it's be'ein, even if it still exists in its original form, because it's already effectively yiyush and shinu rishus. Not really yiyush per se, but...
So. Same thing?
Yeah, well, that's what we said yesterday, yeah. That's what we started saying, yeah. So that's So you see from that Rami Bahama is saying that in that sense, when a Yodesh has owner, when a Yodesh receives ownership of something, it's the equivalent of if it had been sold to somebody else, and therefore that they don't have to return it. Rav Amar, Rav said, and again here also Rav disagrees. No, Olam Eim Alach Rishus Yodesh Lab Rishus Lekeach Dami, not necessarily. Yes, the halacha is like Rav. Yes. Not necessarily. You could say that a Yodesh in that sense is not considered like a Lekeach. But Shiny Hacha, because it's different in this case, there's a special case when it comes to Ribis. The Amakra, because the reason why you have to return Ribis is because the Pasuk says, Al tikach me'ite neshach v'tabis, don't take neshach and tabis. The Gemara explains in Bava Metzia are basically two names for the same thing. It's just two different ways of looking at it. Neshach, because like it bites him. Tabis is the same as Ribis, right. Neshach literally means biting, and Rashi explains on the pasuk because it's like a snake bite. You don't realize, and all of a sudden it pops up. So the same way, you know, a person borrows money at interest, and everybody knows that nowadays with credit card debt, all of a sudden it balloons. Yeah. Okay. So neshach with tabis, and the pasuk continues. The Gemara is not quoting the end of the pasuk, but the pasuk continues. V'chei achicha imach, your brother should live with you, which means ahadole kihechid the nechi badach, which means you have to return it to him so he can continue to live with you. Therefore, l'idei kamazulei rachmana. Therefore, the Torah is only telling the person himself who took the ribis. Libre le'mazel le'rachmana, where the pasuk is not addressing the children because they didn't take it as ribis. You can't say on them. I'll tikach me'ita v'chayachicha imach because they're not the ones who took it in the first place.
They're not considered like the.
Because they inherited it. So therefore, Rav is saying maybe in general a Yerush is considered to be the continuation of his father, Brakai or Davu or whatever. But in this case, we have a Xeris HaKasim that says differently.
Everybody agrees on it?
No, obviously not. Rami Muhammad disagrees. He says it's not because of the Xeris HaKasim, it's because in general, Rosh Hashanah Yerush, Rosh Hashanah Kecha. So, Man Demasni La Braisa. So, whoever said now, so what do we have? So we started in the Gemara yesterday that we referred this machlokas of Rami Bachama and Rava about Rishus Yorish to Rishus Lakeach or not, we referred it to our Mishnah. Now we have Rav Abba Ba'ava saying that no, it refers to the Braisa about Ribis. So Man de Masnila Braisa, the one Rav Abba Ba'ava who says that the machlokas refers to the Braisa, Kol Shekena Masnisi. They would say how much more so than that it refers to the Mishnah, because in the Mishnah, or at least what Rami Bachama is saying. In the Mishnah, the straightforward reading of the Mishnah is talking about that when the father died and bequeathed it to his children, the Gzela still existed, the Iniach Lefneim, he put it in front of them. It took Rava to say, based on Rabbi Oshia's Braisa yesterday, that no, we're talking about that it's not, we're talking about if it doesn't exist anymore. But the simple reading of the Mishnah would be like Rami Bachama. So if you're going to say that Rami Bachama is saying it in connection with the Braisa, how much more so you would say in connection with the Mishnah, where it seems to be more straightforward to understand it that way. Man de Masni Lasnistin, whereas the sum of the Gemara that started off by saying yesterday that Rami Bachama's statement about Rishus Yodish refers to our Mishnah, he might say, Abo Abraisa Rami Bachama ki Rava Masni. He might say that no, when it comes to the Braisa, Rami Bachama would agree with Rava that there is not a general thing of Rishus Yodish, but rather it's because of Xeris HaKasim. But he would hold that in the Mishnah, that from the Mishnah you can prove Rishus Yodish, ki Rishus Leteach, but in the Braisa, not necessarily. You could say it's because of Rava's, because of the Xeris HaKasim that Rava brought. Rashi brings a Girsa the other way around, and Hagoyt HaBach also brings this Girsa, that on the contrary, hello? On the contrary, you could say it the other way around. If you say it refers to the Mishnah, then how much more so to the Braisa? Because at least the Mishnah can be understood where the Gzela no longer exists, like the way Rava understood it. You could understand the Mishnah that way, but if you're nevertheless going to say that Rami Bachama's point still stands, how much more so in the case of the Braisa, where they know that it's money of Ribis, meaning that it's actually still Ba'ain, and yet you would say that they don't have to return it.
So much more so in the Braisa?
According to this Girsa, the way of looking at it is, the way that we have the Girsa in front of us, which is Rashi's first version, is that the Mishnah, it's less clear than the Braisa, because the Mishnah, on the face of it, seems to be talking about that the Gzela still exists. But now we can look at it the other way. We can say, after all, you do have a way of explaining the Mishnah the way Rava explained it yesterday, that the Gzela itself no longer exists. Whereas in the Braisa, there's no question, we're talking about that the Ribis still exists. Because they're saying, Afbishen Yodin change her Ribis, even though they know that this bundle of money that they have in their possession is money of Ribis. So Rashi mentions that Girsa also. It's interesting. Which one does Rashi consider the better explanation? The Girsa we have in front of us in Rashi at the end of the Rashi, Manda Masna Masnissen. Rashi says Berushin Shmaitiv V'Iker. The first I heard the first explanation, and that seems to be the primary one, which is the Girsa the way we have it in the Gemara. But Hagoyt HaBach flips it around. He says he has the Girsa in Rashi. Rishin Shamaiti, I heard the first explanation from my Rebbeim, the Acharin Iker, but the second explanation is the primary, is the better one, which would mean the opposite of the way we have it, in the Gemara. Okay. Be that as it may, the halacha is not like Rami Bachama anyway, so it's kind of a moot point as far as halacha, but it's as far as Lahag Dotor or Lahadira, it's to know which one. Okay. Tanarabon. Hagozel Machelas Bonim. If somebody stole and fed it to his children, as we said in the Mishnah, Turin Milashalim, and the Potter from paying, he niach lifnehem, if he left it as an inheritance to them, Gdolim Chayavim Lashalim, if they're older children, they would be chayav to pay, which again, according to Rami Bachama, would have to be talking about that there was no yish yet, and according to Rava, it wouldn't matter. Ktanim Turim Lashalim, but if they're children, then they're Potter from paying because, as the Gemara is going to talk about later on at the bottom of the Amud and the top of the next Amud, Tanim can't be brought to Beis Din. To bring a case to Beis Din, you have to...
Now or until
that's what we're going to talk about soon. We're going to talk about later whether are they chayav to pay when they're older. We're going to get to that soon. Wait. But meanwhile, this is what we have. If they're gdolim, when the father dies, they're chayav to pay. If they're ktanim, they're potter to pay. The im omru gdolim, but if the older people, again, these are adults, when their father died, if they said, ein onu yodin cheshbonus shechishav avinu imach, we don't know what calculations our father made with you. In other words, maybe he figured it out with you and paid it off, or otherwise figured out that he doesn't owe it to you anymore. Then p'turim. Then they're potter. So the question is, wait, what do you mean? Shum da amri ein onu yodin p'turim? What do you mean? Because they're saying we don't know they're potter. He's arguing bori. Your father stole him. They're arguing, and he never paid back. They're arguing Shema. Maybe he paid back. Is that a reason enough for them to be potter? There are other mafarshim who learn the question differently than Rashi. Maybe it's not even a matter of bori v'shema. What makes us say that there should be any basis to say that he paid back? You don't ordinarily. There is a concept called toyin in the Yodish that you do. There is a concept that Beis Din will try to come up with. The Rosh talks about this. The Gemara talks about it in a few places. There is a concept in Halacha. It comes up in Rav Basra. It comes up in other places. Toyin in the Yodish. When you have a Yodish in Beis Din against somebody else who their father owed money to or whatever, Beis Din will try to come up with arguments in their favor. Because they do not necessarily know everything about what their father did. However, the Rosh says that principle only applies if it's a commonplace kind of claim. So they themselves may not think of it, Beis Din will think of it on their behalf. Not something unusual. It's not that usual that the guy stole and that he hadn't been brought to Beis Din yet or whatever, and voluntarily he paid back or bought the thing from the guy or whatever. That's an unusual kind of thing. Beis Din is not going to be, if the Yoshin
stole
and then let's say later on he paid off the guy in order to buy it. It's an unusual kind of situation. Beis Din is not going to give that taina on behalf of the Yoshin. So therefore, we're back to the question. They're saying, we don't know what kind of cheshbonus our father made with you, meaning maybe he paid you off and therefore we're entitled to keep the thing. Why should we assume that? Why should Beis Din assume that that's a valid enough claim when they're not bringing any proof for it? No, what the Braisa means is different. G'dolim sha'amru, on the contrary, it means if they're older children, they're adults, and they say, Yodim onu cheshbonus shechishav avinu imach. On the contrary, when the Braisa said, Einonu Yodin, it's like, bit me, it's like, Einonu Yodin, you think we don't know what kind of cheshbonus our father made with you? It means, Yodim onu, we do know cheshbonus shechishav avinu imach, that our father made calculations with you. V'lei poshlach gabei, meaning, in other words, we know that, for example, he paid you off, or whatever, v'lei poshlach gabei v'lei midi, and there's nothing of his left by you. Then, p'turim, then they are potter because they're saying, then it's bori, according to Rashi, it's bori versus bori. He's saying bori, he didn't pay me back. They're saying bori that he did. We're familiar with his affairs. We were adults at the time.
They may have to swear,
a shvur tesis or something, but not necessarily a shvur deraisa. Anyway, Tosfos talks about a couple of other details in it. One is that we can believe them because of a migui. They could say, we return you the actual thing. He doesn't have any proof that they still have the thing in their possession after all.
They can say, we returned it, the Yoshin?
Hezarnu, look, yeah, we returned it. So therefore, we can believe them.
That he returned it.
Doesn't matter. The point is that the thing is in their possession. He doesn't have necessarily any proof that it's in their possession. He doesn't necessarily have aid him or whatever. So fine, they could get away with arguing. If they wanted to argue that we returned it, he wouldn't have any proof to the contrary. Therefore, by migui, we can believe them to say that we didn't return it, but our father paid you off for it.
They said they returned it, they wouldn't have a need to show
maybe, okay, maybe they'd have to do a show assessment, I don't know. Anyway, Tosfos says that another possibility is you could be talking about a case. There's not even edim on the original theft. All you have to prove that there was a theft in the first place is that the sons come to Beis Din and admit that their father stole. So then, the guy who's claiming his thing doesn't really have a leg to stand on. Mela, if he had Adim and they're arguing against Adim is one thing, but when there's no Adim, okay. Okay. So that's why they're potter. Tanya Edach, we learn in another Braisa, Hagozel Machal Bonav, if somebody steals and feeds it to his children, Pturin Mil Shalom, then they're potter from paying. Hiniach Lefneim Ba'ochlum, if he left it to them as an inheritance, so when he died, it hadn't yet been consumed, later on they ate them. Then, whether they're adults or whether they're children, then they're chayav.
If
they ate it after he died. Because, again, as long as it existed, it was still birshus of the mara, it was still considered in the owner's rishus. Now, when they ate it, they're the ones who they're the ones who took it out of his rishus. Now, the Gemara is going to talk about later on the Amud, at the end of the Amud, that there is a machlokus between sumchus and the rabbanon, can you take a child to Beis Din? So fine, the previous braisa that said the Tanim HaPotter would be according to Sumchus. This braisa would be according to the Chachamim. That's not the problem. The problem is, never mind, fine. Let's say the Chachamim, fine, according to the Chachamim, you can take a cut into Beis Din, that's not a big deal. Why would they be chayiv? Lo yehei ela da'azik azuki. Wouldn't it be any, why would it be any different, for example, than the case if they had done a regular nezik? And we learned back in Achovo, we learned a month ago, that cheresh shoto v'katan pigiyasan ra, that if a child commits a nezik, they're potter from paying, and they don't even have to, they don't even, mitzad adin, mitzad ikir adin, they don't have to pay when they get older, only b'fnim mishurus adin, or to be yoti de shemaim, or whatever. So over here, why would this be, any? Why would they be in any worse situation than a hezik? Why is it? He has all the kind of magic. Amar Papa Hakakama, he niach lifnehem. Right, but what it means is like this: he left it in front of them as an inheritance. Va'adayin la'ochlum. They hadn't yet eaten them at the time when he died. Ben gdolim ben ktanim chayavim. Then whether they're adults or children, then whether they're adults or children, they're chayav, because at that point then. The thing is still present. Again, since it's Zela over here, it was Rishusa Demara, it was in the owner's Rishusa all this time, and therefore, yeah. In other words, previously, in the question, the Gemara assumed that Hiniach Lefneim Ba'ochlo means that he put it in front of them and they ate it, means while he was still alive, they ate it. So the question is, why they're Chayim? Now we're saying that, no, he left it to them as an inheritance, and then they ate it, then they consumed it. So then, okay, it's already they committed gzela. So then already they committed gzela. And therefore we can make them chayev.
Without change, well, they was...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Omar Rava, he niach lem aviyam parasha'ola. Here's another din related to this concept. Suppose that children were left by their father a borrowed cow. So their father had borrowed a cow to work with it or whatever. He hadn't yet had a chance to return it before he died. Mishtamshin b'kol yimei she'ela. So they can continue using it throughout the time of the she'ela. So he had borrowed it for X amount of time. They can continue to use it throughout for all that amount of time. Mesa, however, dies during that time. Ein chayovin ba'inseha. They're not going to be chayiv in the onus of it, unlike the she'el himself. Their father would have been chayiv for an onus on it, like any she'el. But they're not the ones themselves who borrowed it. Therefore, they didn't accept on themselves the shmira. Therefore, you can't make them chayiv for the einsim. Obviously, if
they're accepting the cow, it should have
doesn't matter. But it does, it's not though, because they're not, because they
didn't return the cow.
So no, but it doesn't matter. They didn't take on the conditions at the time. Obviously, if the guy wants to tell them you're going to be allowed to continue using the cow only on condition that you accept that that's different. But if he didn't do that, then yeah. Now, the relevance of it to our sugya is, suppose that by mistake they thought this cow actually belonged to their father, they didn't realize it was borrowed, and they shechted and ate it. Then what they do is they pay the cheaper price of meat, meaning Rashi says two-thirds of the value. The logic is like this. You can't make them chayav for the nezek of it, because it's basically an onus. They had no way of knowing, that it's not their father.
So they think.
So we can't make them chayev for the actual nezek. All we can make them do is the fact that they had hanav, just like we talked about earlier in the Masechta, your animal went into somebody else, or your animal fell into somebody else's garden and had hanav, you pay mashananis, which is the cheaper value, the fact that now you don't have to feed it or whatever. Fine, now they got some meat. They don't have to buy some more meat for a while, so they do have to pay for that, but you pay the cheaper price. And the logic Rashi says is also, if they had known that they were going to end up having to pay for it, meaning that it's not their father's, they might not have eaten it. So therefore, therefore you can't make them pay the full price for it. But on the other hand, you can make them pay two-thirds, because fine, a person would be willing, even if a person wasn't regularly going to eat meat, fine, but if it's selling for two-thirds the price, they'd buy it at a discount. Also, Rashi adds they give back the skin of the animal.
Why the skin?
Because this is what it is, they're not eating the skin.
No, but I mean...
So therefore they have to return it. But it's not theirs after all. So the fact is, there's the meat that they ate, fine. You know, if they hadn't eaten meat yet, they'd return the actual meat. Like this, they already ate the meat, you make them pay two-thirds of it. The skin they didn't eat, so therefore return that.
And if they make shoes on it, they don't...
The pashtos would be the same thing. It starts to... Okay. Continues Rava. He niach lem aviyam achrayus nechasim chayav l'shalem. If their father left them achrayus nechasim, meaning karka, then they're chayav to pay. So what part of Rava's statement is that last part referred to? Somewhere in the fact statement of whether it says Achrayus Nechasim refers to the first case, the fact that we said Meisa and Chayovin Vayinseha, and some say that it refers to the Sefer, the case where they ate it. In other words, there's two ways of understanding it. One is to say that if the cow dies during the time of She'ela, they're potter from the Einsin, provided their father didn't leave them karka. But if you left them karka, then you do take karka to pay for it. Or you can say, and the logic is, because of the shibud created while their father was alive. Or the other way of looking at it is that it refers to the sefer. If they shechted the animal, thinking that it was theirs, and ate it, then we're saying they paid Dmei Basa Bezoel, unless their father left them karka, in which case they don't pay Dmei Basa Bezoel, they pay the full value. Because again, then the fact that there's karka over here, it means that they can be in place of their father. So, Manda Masnila Reisha Kosha Kena Sefer. Whoever says that statement of Rava, the last part over there refers to the Reisha, saying that they're chayav for the oinsin of the cow, koshken asefa, how much more so the sefer? Because the Reisha, at least there was no pshia. The sefer, there was a certain extent it was pshia on their father's part, that he didn't even tell them that it was borrowed, so that they ended up eating it. Yes. And therefore, pliga de Rapapa, in which case it would come out then that Rava disagrees with what Rapapa says. We're going to quote on the next line what Rapapa says. Well, manda masnila sefer, whereas if we say that the part about achrayus nechasim refers to the sefer, to the case where they shechted it, avala reisha loy, they would say that no, in the case of the reisha, the fact of the matter is it wasn't oinus, and then we would say that no. The point is, if we say that it refers to the reisha, what it means is that the shibud was created at the time that he borrowed it. So therefore, when he borrowed it, he was still alive. The shibud was created then, and it still continues to exist until the animal actually dies. Whereas if you take the view that the shibud is only created at the time of the oinus, well, the oinus only happened after he died. So therefore, no shibud was ever created on this karka, and therefore you can't hold the yisoimim responsible for it. So then, if we look at it that way, v'hainu de Rapapa, then it would come out that Rava is saying the same thing as Rapapa. What does Rapapa say? De Amar Rapapa, posap l'pora gnuvaloi, suppose that somebody had previously, before Shabbos, stolen a cow, v'tovcha b'Shabbos, and then on Shabbos he shechted it, chayev. He's going to be chayev for the tashlomi abba v'chamisha. I come live with the Rabbinay. You would think come live with the Rabbinay because he's chayav skila for Shabbos, therefore should be potter from the paying. No, shekva chayav b'gneva kodem shiyavali day isur Shabbos, because he already became chayav for the stealing before Shabbos. So therefore, in other words, what it is like this.
Wait.
You have like this. When he stole it before Shabbos, at that point he became chayav in the keren. What happens? What's created by him shechting it now is a knas. When it comes to a knas, we don't say kam libididavimine. We learned, Rashi quotes from a Gemara in Tzubas that we learned back then, when we had a whole long sugya on kam libididavimine, that kam libididavimine does not apply to knas. It applies to dinim mamonis. If you have a chiyuv mamon that comes at the same time as a chiyuv misa, then you potter, but not a chiyuv knas. A chiyuv knas, you can be chayiv in a knas. even in a case where there's going to be a chiyuv skill or what have you, I think that's what it's like there. Because a knas is sort of like a kapara, but because a knas doesn't follow the usual rules of dinim mamonis.
So knas and misa both would apply.
So in other words, given that the original gneva, the keren, came into existence before Shabbos, because he already stole it before Shabbos and became chayiv in the keren, then the extra knas, the extra three or four amount the times that he's going to have to pay now for the tvicha or mechira, that can come into play on Shabbos if it doesn't contradict kam libid rabbinay.
Keren would, yeah.
But but suppose that he had borrowed the cow, v'tovcha b'Shabbos, and then he shechted it on Shabbos, where then the gzela, the moment when he shechted it, is the moment when he's stealing it from the owner, because he takes it up until this point, it was in the owner's rishus, he's supposed to be returning it at the end. Now he can't do that anymore. So now, then he's potter, she'isur Shabbos, v'isur gneva, b'yom kechem, because now the whole thing, the keren, as well as the tashlum edalav behe, all come in at the same time, Karen can't come in because of Isra Shabbos, come over the Rav Minei, therefore nothing comes in. So the point is, the point of that in reference to our sugya is that what Rav Papa is saying is only when he shechts it, rather, this shoyo, as long as he had it in his rishus, it doesn't count. Only when he shechts it, does he then become chayav? And because it's Shabbos, he can't. Now, returning to what Rava was saying before, if we say that the chiyuv on the shoyl is for the oynes is as of when he borrowed it, then again, that takes place long before Shabbos in Rakapa's scenario. He'd still be chayav. Whereas if you say that the shibud is only created when the onus actually happens, when the animal actually dies, or in Rapapa's case, when it's shechted, then what Rava is saying and what Rapapa is saying fit very well together. Rashi, by the way, brings up his Rebbeim had another girsa over here that the Rapapa's reason why if the shoyl took the animal and shechted it on Shabbos, why should he be potter from the tashlumi avav hamisha? Is because of a concept that we learned back in Merubah. She'im ein gneva ein tvicha ve'ein mechira. If you can't be chayav for the isur gneva, you can't be chayav tvicha and mechira on top of gneva. You can have. The Torah says you pay 4 for a sheep, 5 for an ox. It never can be 3 or 4. So if you can't be chayav for the keren, you can't be chayav only for the knas. Because that would be you'd be paying 3 or 4, and the Torah says 4 or 5. Rashi says that Rashi has a whole long explanation over here that point is true, but it doesn't belong here in our Gemara. It belongs in other places in the Gemara, but not in connection with what we're saying over here. On the other hand, the Rambam does have that girsa. When the Rambam brings this halacha in Hilchos Gneva, he mentions this detail. She means Gneva in Tvicha Vein Mechira. In other words, that if it weren't for that consideration, yes, you could say that he wouldn't be chayiv in the Keren, but he would be chayiv in the Kefal and the Abava Hamisha. But because you can't have that, because it has to be 4 or 5, and the 4 or 5 includes the Keren, which you would be chayiv in for the ordinary Gneva, and you can't be chayiv in because Kamla B'dinav Mine, therefore the whole thing is thrown out. When the pasuk says he should return the thing that he stole, ma tamid by asher gozal. So when it says beheishiv esakzela, he should return the stolen thing. Asher gozal, of course he stole it. What is ma tamid by asher gozal? What does the word asher gozal come to add? It means yachta kein asher gozal. It means he has to return like what he stole. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says, if the actual gzela, if the actual thing he stole still exists, then he has to return it. If not, then he's potter from paying for the value of it. Now, that can't obviously mean the gazlan himself. The gazlan himself is going to be chayev if he's koine it with yi or shinu reshus, whatever shinu shinu mai says, we've learned in the previous parak. Yeah. Of course, he's going to have to be talking about the yershin. That is the source for what our Mishnah is saying. Hagozal amacha is bona p'turim el shalom.
And if he returns it altered in some way?
So the point is that once it's altered, he's not obligated to return the actual thing. He only has to return the monetary value of it, as we learned in the previous paragraph.
The non-altered thing.
Non-altered, you have to return the actual thing. But we're saying, so that's the point. Mikan Amru, based on this, the Chachamim said, Agoiz Olamachlis Bonav, Turim L'Shalim, then they're parts of him paying, but he niach l'fneihem, but if he put it in front of them, meaning he left it to them as an inheritance, and it still exists, ben gerlim and chanim chayavim, then whether they're adults or children, they're chayav because of that, because you still have the actual object exists. Again, as based on what we learned yesterday, this would have to be talking about according to Rami Bahama anyway, this would have to be lifnei yirush, because l'achal yirush, they yarshin it, and that's it, it's in their rishos. Mishum sumchus amru, in the name of sumchus, they said, gdolim chayavim ktanim turim. It depends. If they're adult children, then they're chayav to pay for that reason. Ktanim turim. But if they're children, then they're potter, because that's what we were talking about before. Now the Gemara is going to go into more detail about this. You can't take ktanim to base din, according to sumchus. When you have a din Torah and your opposite part, your opposite number is a cotton, then that's it. The case can't be brought.
At the time or later?
You can't be brought at the time. You'd have to wait till they're given. So in this connection, the Gemara tells us a case. Bar Chamua de Rabbi Yirmiyah, the son of the father-in-law of Rabbi Yirmiyah, so his brother-in-law, Torak Gali Ba'api de Rabbi Yirmiyah. He slammed the door in front of Rabbi Yirmiyah. What happened? His father had passed. The father-in-law of Rabbi Yirmiyah, the father of this boy, had passed away. Rabbi Yirmiyah argued that he had rights to this house, that he had a reason, that he had rights to this house, as we're going to say in the case
of
here. He himself, Rabbi Yirmiyah,
but his wife,
not the pastor's him. But he's going to say in a second that I made a chazak on it. But this son, Rabbi Yirmiyah's brother-in-law, who was a katan at the time, slammed the door to keep him out, so he can take it over and inherit it. Also, like I made to Rabbi Ovin, so Rabbi Yirmiyah came to Rabbi Ovin for a din Torah. Omar and Rabbi Ovin said, "What's the problem? Shaloyu teveya. Okay, he's claiming what belongs to him. He inherited it from his father. What's the problem?" So Rabbi Yirmiyah says, "V'hamai sina sadi da'achzikei be'b'chaye da'avua, but I can bring edim that I made a chazok on it during his father's lifetime." In other words, that Rabbi Yirmiyah is saying, it's true, it was at one time this katan, my father-in-law's house, but while he was alive, he sold it to me, or gave it to me, as the case may be. I've already made a chazok on it for 3 years. After 3 years, as we're learning in Baba Basri, you can't expect me to still have my deed to prove that. Based on that chazaka, based on the edim of chazaka, that should be enough to say that I own the house. He has no rights to it. Amalei, so Reb Oven tells him, "Can you accept testimony from edim not in the presence of the other party? This cotton can't be brought to Beis Din. It's as if he doesn't exist. So he doesn't have that. So therefore, fine, you have edim. What good does it do if you don't have the opposite party to the din Torah in Beis Din, and the katan is considered as if he's not there?" Well, that's the only way to keep Rabbi Yirmiyah out, evidently.
Sure, he had it.
Yeah. Okay. The question.
I mean, even if he had.
Fine, but doesn't he had das to lock the door? But it's still not enough das to be able to. Okay. Question is,
why? We're not interested if he had das.
The point is, it's a katan. Yeah. Okay, the question is, why not? Why? We just said in the Brisa that the Chachamim say that whether the children of the Gazlan are adults or children, they're chayav to repay. In other words, that you can bring a cotton to Beis Din. So what's the problem? We'll bring the cotton to Beis Din, I'll bring the halacha like the Chachamim. Amalei, so Rav Oven tells him, Hare machlokas sumchus betzidach. Fine, but right there, you have a machlokas sumchus. The halacha may, they said that Chachamim can't be brought to Beis Din. The halacha may well be like him.
Omar says,
so what is everybody going to the trouble of holding like sumchus lachun ledidi to take away what's rightly mine? Yeah, what are you talking about? The possibility that halacha might be like sumchus. Okay. Meanwhile, eventually the matter rolled along. In other words, the whole case was brought to the attention of Motel Kamed Rababahu. Was brought to the attention of Rababahu. It's true, Rab Oven didn't have a proof one way or the other whether the halacha is like sumchus or not. All he's saying is the halacha might be like sumchus, and therefore you don't have the right to the house. Or not, you don't have the right, but you're not able to bring your edim and then lay claim to the house. Now the case came to the attention of Rav Abo, Omer, and he says,
Pasha says that he was still a child.
Omer, so Rav Abo says, haven't you heard the din that Rav Yosef Achama said in the name of Rav Yoshia? If a child grabbed a hold of with his avodim, Rashi has two explanations, but one, avodim means he took along his avodim to help him in what he's going to do next. Or the second explanation is, Tokaf Avodim, Rashi says, is he grabbed a hold of somebody else's Avodim, claiming that they're mine. Either it means his own Avodim he took along as assistance, or it means he took somebody else's Avodim, claiming that they're his. He goes into somebody else's property, and he says, Shalihu, it's mine. So according to the first explanation of Rashi, he's using the Avodim to help grab a hold of the field. And according to the second explanation, he's doing both. He's taking somebody's avodim, and he's avodim that up until now, as far as we knew, belonged to somebody else, a field which, as far as we knew up until now, belonged to somebody else, and claiming that it's mine.
How do you do that? They dig something?
Yeah, whatever. They grab a hold. I don't know. They go stand watch by the gates to prevent whatever, you know. And he says it's mine. We don't say, well, okay, you know, he's a cotton, we can't do anything, we'll wait till he grows older. No, we take it away from him right now on the spot. When he gets older, fine, he can bring Adim. If he has reason to argue that these are his Avadim or his character, fine, at that point he can bring Avadim, Benira, and then we'll see. So by the same logic over here, Rav Avohu says, do the same thing. Give the house for now to Rabbi Yirmiyah. He has an Adim after all. When this child, his brother-in-law, grows up, then fine, if he has Adim to the contrary, then yes. Okay, the question is, how do you compare the two cases? The difference is, in that case, if Tinik Shetaka Avadim, he didn't have a chazaka from his father. There was no chazaka previously that these Avadim or this field that he's trying to lay claim to ever belonged to his father.
Demapkinim,
when we take it away from him. Because he has no chazaka from his father. But if he had a chazaka from his father, in this case, we know that at one time this house belonged to Rabbi Yirmiyah's father-in-law. The only question is, the fact is, we know that years ago, we can look in the phone book from 20 years ago and find that. No, everybody knows that at one time it belonged to the father of this boy. Nobody's doubting that. Or Rabbi Yirmiyah is saying, it's true, at one point it belonged to him. Then he sold it to me, or he gave it to me.
So we need a chazaka.
So like this, the boy is relying on the previous chazaka that his father had. That at one time we know that this house belonged to his father. So then, Lloyd, not necessarily would you say you take it away from him in that case. So Tosfos talks about then that means evidently is even if it wouldn't even matter if Rabbi Yirmiyah had chazaka as in momentary chazaka as in like he was in the house at the time. Regardless, because we know at one time. In other words, we know Rabbi Yirmiyah had a chazaka of 3 years. Fine, that's what he's saying. I have Adim to prove that. But even Tosfos says, even let's say Rabbi Yirmiyah had been in the house at that time, and this boy had thrown him out and locked the door, you still wouldn't say, well, I was in there at the time, and therefore that creates a certain chazaka. No, because the we're saying over here it depends strictly on chazaka davur, strictly on the fact that at one time we know that this house belonged to the boy's father.
What does this mean? I mean, if he bought it, it belonged to Yishver. So what?
I don't understand. You don't yarshin from Yishver.
No, he's tied the shver, sold it to him.
Fine, he has Adim.
The shver, the son. What does the chazaka that he had a chazaka, but he wasn't?
No, but fine, and you have Adim, but you're going to have...
I'm all on this chazaka with 3 years.
Yeah, fine. But the point is the boy has a stronger... The boy who is locking the door and keeping Rabbi Yirmiyah out, because he's basing himself on chazaka davua, therefore he has a stronger situation. If he was an adult, then that wouldn't be any stronger than Rabbi Yirmiyah's chazaka. Rabbi Yirmiyah would bring his Adim, and that would be the end of that. But because he's a katan, and we're saying maybe the halacha is like sumchus that you can't take a katan to base in, therefore Rabbi Yirmiyah's
chazaka. There's a big question here. You're saying you cannot take a katan to base in because he's a katan, but his chazaka, the katan's chazaka that he claims, that you can accept.
No, again, if it's not based on chazaka da'avua, you can't.
But the child says chazaka da'avua.
We know it was chazaka da'avua. We don't need the child. We know. Everybody knows. Everybody who lived in this neighborhood 10 years ago knows
that.
Rabbi Yirmiyah also agrees that, Rabbi Yirmiyah is not arguing that the house never belonged. The son is only basing himself, why is this house mine? Because I inherited it from my father. Everybody knows it was my father's. Rabbi Yirmiyah is agreeing it was at one time your father's. He's just claiming that I bought it from him previously. With that said, though, there are Rishonim who learn differently. There are a number of Rishonim who say differently from Tosfos that no, there would be a difference. If Rabbi Yirmiyah had actually been in the house at the time, then maybe he'd have a stronger position. But like this, where he wasn't in the house at the time, then yes. Yeah. In this connection, so now the Gemara is going to get into a bit of discussion about what are the circumstances when we need both parties to a din Torah to be present when the Edim are brought to Beis Din and when not. Amar of Ashi, Amar of Shamsi, Mekablam Edim Shalei B'fnei Beis Din. We can accept Edim Shalei B'fnei Baal Din. We can accept Edim not in the presence of the other party to the din Torah. So Reuven claims, let's say, Reuven has a claim against Shimon. Reuven can bring his Edim even if Shimon is not present in Beis Din.
So the child could have brought the Edim?
Not the child. The point is, according to this, it would come out that Rabbi Yirmiyah could have brought the Edim. However, Tohi bar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan looked into this. Tohi literally means he sniffed Like he was sniffing around at this, like to see whether we whether this is valid. How is that possible? How can you wait with him? Do we accept Edim not in the presence of the Baal Din? So, Kibla Minei Rav Yosi Bar Chanina. So Rav Yosi Bar Chanina received the following explanation from Rav Yochanan, that, or maybe from Rav Ashi, that there is a specific case we're talking about. We're going to show you who Chola. Suppose that he was sick. There's two different ways that we're showing him understand. Does it mean that the Teveya, the plaintiff, is sick and afraid, you know what, I may die soon. If I die, then my children are not going to know how to handle this dintota. It has to be finished now before I die. Therefore, maybe Basin can accept the Edim without the other guy being there. Or maybe it's the other way around. Maybe the Nitva, maybe the defendant is sick and therefore can't come to Basin. Or the Edim are sick. Again, they might die soon. And if you don't get the Imlai Akshav Emosai, Rashi says, you know, if you don't hear the Edim from them now, it's going to be a goner. Or to show you Edim of Akshav Leilach Lamdinathayam, or that an Edim were about to go overseas. And they sent a summons to the Nitva, to the defendant, and he didn't come. So Tosfos discusses over here, does this mean the v'shochu lo v'lo is referring to all of these cases, that it has to be, let's say, for example, hu chola means the plaintiff, the teveya, is sick. Does it mean that even in that case, we have to still, there's two conditions. You have to have A, that he's sick, and therefore he wants the case wrapped up as soon as possible, but B, that we sent a summons to the nitva, to the defendant, and he didn't show up. Then we can listen to the eders without his presence. But one or the other would not be enough. Or maybe the v'shochu lo v'lo only refers to the last case. If he's chola, the edim are cholim, maybe there's no time to wait until you send him a summons. Meanwhile, the plaintiff or the edim may die. But if they're mavakshim le'elachim nafiyam, fine, you know, you'll get your ticket changed. You know, you'll go a week later. You know, let's give time to summon the defendant to base him. Now Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel also, you can have Edim be interrogated and based in without the presence of the other party. And again, Marukva says it's not so simple. Yeah, of course we're talking Dinei Mamonos. Dinei Nefashos actually we'll talk about later. We'll talk about in a little bit.
Because it's making a general statement.
Yeah, well, okay. But Baal Din implies that it's Dini Mamonis. If it was Dini Nefashis, you don't really call him Baal Din. Sort of Lahavdil, it's sort of like in secular law, you know, when you have a monetary case, then you have, you know, Pliny versus Pliny. But when it's Dini Nefashis, when it's a crime, then it's the state versus Pliny, you know. So then there's no Teveya and Nitva, but the state is the Teveya, so to speak. So here also, you know, when you're using the word Baal Din, it implies that there's two equal sides.
We the people.
Yeah. Basically. I mean, if you ever look up the legal cases, you'll always see, you know, criminal ones are always, you know, the people of, you know, the state of New York or the people of New York or whatever
people,
versus, you know, people of whatever it is, the people of New York versus Cluny. Yeah. Anyway.
It doesn't say people, it's just the people.
Okay, whatever. Depends whether it's state or federal court, whatever, anyway. Okay. Shmuel is making a general statement, but Ma'ukva says, L'didi mifhar sheli minei de Shmuel, that Shmuel personally clarified to me what he meant. It's not a blanket statement. Obviously, in most cases, the Baal Din does need to be there before you can interrogate the Edim. The case is going to poschu lebedine. The case is that they already started the Din Torah. They already started the Din Torah while he was present. The shochu levelei osa, and now they sent him a message, come back. Your opposite number here in the Din Torah is bringing Edim. You should be there. Bloy off then. He didn't come. In other words, therefore, what it comes out of, in other words, what Rabbi Yochanan is saying is right, and what Shmuel is saying is right. You have one or the other. If you didn't start the Din Torah yet, then you have the conditions that we said before. It has to be that one or the other party is sick, or the Edim are sick, or Medina Fiyam, or whatever. Aside from that, even if everybody's healthy and nobody's going overseas, if they started the Din Torah when with the guy present, and now he doesn't want to come for the next session, then you can listen to the Edim in his absence. Avaloi poskolei b'dina, but if they did not yet start the Din Torah, mafi amalei, then the defendant can say, I'm not coming because I'm nola based in Agadol, because I say that we should go to the based in Agadol in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, in other words, I don't have to come to the Din Torah over here. Before once we started the Din Torah, fine, you have jurisdiction. But before we started the Din Torah, I contest the jurisdiction. Yeah. Okay, Hachi Kiposkoi Nami.
Can you contest the jurisdiction to begin with? Can't you have to go through the lower jurisdiction and
that? No. In Halacha, there's no such thing. There's no such thing as appeals in Halacha, really. But Tosfos does talk about over here that whether there's a difference over here, whether there's a difference over here between loans versus any other kind of dini mamonis. Tosfos starts off by saying, first of all, the nitba, the defendant, can argue that the teveya can't say we're only going to do the detora in Eretz Yisrael, because otherwise, you know, any person is going to blackmail the other guy. You know, you either I claim you owe me money, you're either going to give it to me or I'm going to schlep you to Eretz Yisrael. Okay. So the question is, fine, so even if they started the Din Torah, Motzi Omalei LeBeis Din Agadol Azilna, why can't the Nitba say, you know what, let's forget about over here and let's go to Eretz Yisrael and continue the case over there? The answer is, Omer Rabin is going to knock a disc in LeBeis Din Agadol. Yes, but the case we're talking about over here is where the other party to the Din Torah has a letter from the Beis Din Agadol giving authority to the local basin to judge the case and force it to be done. Well, that's the point. If they sent such a letter, then yes. If not, then yes, he does have an argument that we should have a change of jurisdiction, change of venue to the basin Agado. But if they sent a letter authorizing the local basin, then no, he doesn't have that argument once the Din Torah started.
He sent a letter that only the local basin.
Not only, it's not saying, in other words, they sent a letter authorizing the local basin to handle the case. The local basin actually started the case.
Right.
Now, in the middle of the case, he wants to argue, never mind the local basin. Fine, but if they didn't send a letter, then yes, he does have he can argue even during the case for a change of venue. By the way, based in Agado over here, on the face of it, we're talking about based in Agado, Rashi says, the Eretz Yisrael, meaning the ones who have smicha. Right. However, the Rosh says, nowadays, nobody has smicha. This still has relevance. Based in Agado means any based in which is recognized as the most prominent based in of the time. I don't know if in modern terms there is. I don't know today, what would that mean? I mean, it might mean, for example, one of the great Batei Dinim in Eretz Yisrael, like Zalman Nechemia Goldberg or somebody big like that, you know, who else? I don't know, really, but yeah. There is that basic concept that when you have somebody who's recognized as a basin that's recognized as the prominent basin in the generation, then for that purpose they're the equivalent of the basin.
So what does it say, basin Hagadol?
That's what it means, the great basin of that time. Onward. Rav says, when it comes to kiyum shtaris, which we learned back in Ksubas, you have to certify the signatures on a shtar to make sure that they're valid. So suppose, for example, the edim who are signed on the shtar are planning to travel away. So the malva wants to get the shtar certified before they leave, that they can certify their signatures. That you can do shalei b'fnei baldin. You can do that not in the presence of the other baldin. So Tosfos says, then that's not just true of kiyum shtaris. We just said before that if the edim are planning to go overseas, then in general you can do it shalei b'fnei baldin, not only kiyum shtaris.
Right.
So therefore, Tosfos explains that no, it means regardless whether the edim are planning to go overseas or not. The whole concept of kiyum shtaris is only d'rabbanan, Tosfos points out. We learned that back in Ksuvos when we learned all about kiyum shtaris. Midaraisa, once edim are signed on a shtar, that's it. It's as if they were already interrogated and based in, and nothing further is needed. The whole concept of kiyum shtaris, of validating and certifying the signatures, is only d'rabbanan. Well, if it's only d'rabbanan, then fine, we're not going to be machmir on the idea of making sure that the baal din is there.
Can you do that with nobody being there, just by themselves?
Well, one or the other, one party or the other. I mean, in this case, the Malva, for example, is going to be, why would a third party who has nothing to do with the thing, why would he be bringing the Shtar to base in the first place?
But the one who, either Tevea or the Nitva.
Yeah, we're talking about the Tevea or the Nitva, and usually the Tevea would be bringing the Shtar, right? Whereas the Nitva.
But does that have to be there when it's certified?
He's the one bringing it to base. So yeah, of course he's going to be there. He wants to start back afterwards. Yeah. Okay. Let me explain to you, Rabbi Yochanan, the general thing that we said before, where Rabbi Yochanan at the beginning of this sugya said, "What do you mean? How can you accept Edim not in the presence of the Baal Din? Where did Rabbi Yochanan get is such a pshitus that it's like that you can't do that?" Because I'll explain to you why Rabbi Yochanan took that as a given that it can't be done. The reason is, because the Torah says by a shura muad that the owner was warned and he didn't watch it. Meaning the Torah is saying the owner of the shura has to come stand there when his shura is being testified against in Beis Din. So therefore, by that logic, you have to have the Baal Dover has to be there when Adris is brought against him. Well, with that said, you were mentioning before Din and Ephashus. So actually, the Rashba talks about, this is on the face of it, we just said there's a whole bunch of exceptions to this rule. If it's really Midaraisa, how does that work? And he says, no. Really, the Pasuk is only talking about Dinin Ephashos, to commit his Bailam Pach Mitzvah Asher. That we're Rabbi Yochanan is broadly applying that to Dinin Mominus as well. But since Minat Torah doesn't specifically apply to Dinin Mominus, then therefore we can be more lenient on it in various cases where we have extenuating circumstances, where he's going to die, where the Edom are going to go overseas, where he didn't listen to the, where he didn't come to the Beis Din for the next session, etc. Omar Rava, Hilchsim Kaiman is a shtar b'shalod b'nei Baal Din. The halacha is, like we just said before, that you can do kiyum shtaris even not in the presence of the Baal Din. Even if he's standing there screaming, I'm claiming that the shtar is forged, we don't pay attention to him. However, but if he says Nikitu li zimna, give me some time, until I can bring Edus and prove that this shtar is false, then we give him time. If he comes by that time, then good. If he doesn't come during that time, we wait for him another Monday, Thursday, and Monday. And this that we're going to be talking about over here is not just true as far as Kiyum Shtaris. This procedure that we're going to be talking about over here is in general true when somebody owes money, for example, and isn't paying. When a person owes money to somebody else, right, we have valid proof of it, such as a shtar or adim or what have you, and he's refusing to pay, or he's stalling for time. This is in general true. This whole process that we're going to describe over here. It was in Rambam Shlosha Prakim last week. Okay. So if he doesn't come during that time, and usually the amount of time you give him is 30 days, unless otherwise specified, then you wait another bahab, because it's a week and a half, but those Monday and Thursday are the days when Beis Din usually sits, so therefore we give him that last time. Eloi also, if he still doesn't come during that time, kasvin and psicha elevei, tishin yom, and then we write a psicha, meaning a shtar of shamta, of nidu. They put him in chayrim because he's not paying. For 90 days. Why 90 days? Often, this is the case. This is you sometimes see every so often you see in the news that somebody didn't obey a summons from Beis Din and has been put in Cherem. That's based on our Gemara over here. That's what we're talking about, the person not obeying the summons from Beis Din. So why 90 days? During the first 3 days, we don't yet go into his property to start seizing it on behalf of the Malveh, let's say, Da'ama Katarach Bezuzi, because we can figure that maybe during that 30 days, he's running around trying to raise the money. So therefore, don't take his nechassim yet. Wait to see 30 days if he can raise the money. The nezuv, or he's looking around to borrow maybe from somebody else. During the next 30 days, the middle 30 days, we also don't yet go to his nechassim to start seizing things. Because we say, okay, the first 30 days, he was looking around for somebody to lend him. Now he couldn't find anybody to lend, to borrow, therefore Katarach Mazabin. So therefore he's going to the trouble of trying to sell things to raise the money. Basroi Nami Lo Nachsin. First 30 days to borrow, second 30 days to sell. And Basroi Nami Lo Nachsin Lo Nichsei. During the third 30 days, we also don't go to his Nachasim yet. Because let's say, for example, fine, he found a potential buyer sometime during those middle 30 days. Now that potential buyer himself may be short on cash and need 30 days to raise the cash. So therefore, you give him that chance also. Okay, Mephoshim say, obviously, we're only talking about if we saw that he really is looking. I mean, if we stop and see that he's sitting on it, that he stops sitting and doing nothing, we do a factory. Loy also, if he still doesn't come after all that time, kasvin and adrach, 90 days, kasvin and adrachta am nichse, then at that point, you write an adrachta, which is a psak din that the malveh is entitled to go seize property of his to collect the debt, Adrachta comes from a word that means to pursue, because it literally the malva has it. No, that's actually Meloshin Hidrichuhu, like a possible Shoftin, Hidrichuhu, pursue him, chase him. So the malva now has the ability to go chase after in the chosim, tarka, that belongs to the loiva to collect. So that's an adrachta, and is the chosim. And by the way, the Rambam adds also, at that point, you master the nidri. Because the whole point of the nidui was to get him to work on it, to get him to work on it. He knows he's got 90 days that he's going to be. He knows he's going to have 90 days that he's going to be in cherem.
Sending the sheriffs, basically.
Yeah, basically. So at that point, you're already sending the sheriffs anyway. You're already sending the malva himself. Therefore, the nidui is lifted. Yeah. Behind the Amar Asina. All this is only talking about if he said, "I'm going to come," and just we see that he stole it. But if he says lachatchila, you sent me a summons, I'm not coming. La alter kasvinin. Then we write the adrachta right away. There's no sense in putting him in chayrim in that case because at that point let the malva collect his money. Bahani mila b'malva. Now all of this b'milva. All this only applies if we're talking about a loan. B'kodin la alter kasvinin. But if suppose you have a case of b'kodin where the owner of the b'kodin says I want my thing back and the other guy is stalling for time. Again, we write an adrachta right away because there's no, what do you mean? You're going and trying to raise money, etc. You're supposed to have the pekodin in your possession the whole time.
Yeah, adrachta is a document.
An adrachta is a document that says this malva is entitled to go look for nechassim that belonged to this loiva or once belonged to him and he sold since the time of the loan and take them and take them.
To the sheikhim, to the, who is it?
The malva takes this adrachta and he goes and starts looking for property. And then once he finds it, he goes back to Beis Din and they write an official document that says this malva now has possession of this cowboy or whatever. Yeah. And then Amram described it in Hilchos Mechira based on this Gemara and some other Gemara. So you can see it's a whole long involved process. Yeah. Yes, let's say he doesn't want to take the shvuah, but he's not paying. So then we write out a thing, the altar right away. Yeah. Okay. Now, when we write this adrachta on karka, we only write an adrachta on karka. We never write an adrachta on metaltalin. To seize metaltalin. Because what might happen is the malva might then come and take these metaltalin and eat them and consume them. And all this time, remember, the original situation was that the loiva is stalling for time because he says, I have edim who are going to prove this shtar is false. Let's say he does ever show up with his edim. Meanwhile, and he shows that the shtar is false. He's not going to find anything to collect from because the malva will have already eaten the metaltalin. Whereas karka doesn't, karka remains where it is. The e islam karka the malva kasvinan. However, if the malva himself has karka, then we can. Because fine, let's say the malva does end up eating the metaltalin. Fine, we'll just take back from his karka. Veloihi, however, that's not so. The halacha is not like that. Adrachta on the taltalin like kasvinan. We never write an adrachta on the taltalin period, regardless. Afagab the isla karka, even if the malva has karka. Chayshin and shema tachsik, because we have to be concerned, it may be deteriorate. Melam, it may get flooded, it may get whatever. So Mela, in other words, karka that belongs to the loiva, we allow the malva to take it, and the loiva can eventually get it back. Look, if it was going to deteriorate, it would deteriorate in his own possession as well. But when it comes to karka that we're saying, hypothetically, he could use to take away from the malva, to reimburse him for the metaltalin that we're taking from him, we don't want to take that chance. Okay, we'll continue with the process. We'll continue with the process tomorrow. Just one thing, by the way, one the Rambam mentions in a number of places that the early Gaonim made a takana that even though we say throughout Shas that there's a shibud for loans only on karka, they made a takana that there can be a shibud on metaltalin as well, because there came a point in history when most Jews didn't own land anymore. And therefore, if you did that, you know, nobody would be willing to lend money anymore, knowing that they can't collect from the Talmud. So therefore, the Goyim made a takana to the Goyim early during the time of the period of the Goyim, about 400 years before the Rambam, they made a takana that from now on you can collect from the Talmud.
Surprising that it didn't do it before on very large sums of money.
In the times of the Gemara, almost everybody owned karka. Most people were farmers. By the time you're talking about the time of the Goyim, you're talking about when the Muslims were in control of Babel. You know the famous thing you hear about it every so often on certain blogs or whatever, the jizya, the official tax that non-Muslims have to pay for protection, so to speak, from the local Muslim. Part of it was also if you were a landowner, they charged you a very high tax. So after a while, most Jews decided it's not really economical anymore to own land. So therefore, yeah.